Hello everyone, I'm Keith Parent, and welcome to Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio International. Today we're putting our attention on Radio Prague, which this year is celebrating its 80th anniversary. But before we actually bring you a piece that Radio Prague recently did on their program, we're going to go back to an important time in history, especially Czech history, and that was something known as the Prague Spring. In the late 1960s, things started to change in Czechoslovakia, but it wasn't long after the Soviet authorities were not very happy with Czech politicians and decided to invade Czechoslovakia. Let's take a look at how and what happened at Radio Prague.
Ať mír dál zůstává s touto krajinou, zloba, závist, zášť, strach a svár.
In the course of 1969 and 1970, Czechoslovak radio transformed back into what it had been in the 1950s, a tool of hardline propaganda. In the process, over 700 radio staff were forced to leave their jobs. Those who stayed found their freedom of expression severely curtailed. To give an idea of the extent to which things had changed since August 1969, the first anniversary of the Soviet-led invasion, I will start with a short extract from Radio Prague's broadcast back in 1968, as the tanks rolled into the city. At the time, the radio was playing a crucial role in keeping the world informed of what was really happening, including reports of violent incidents and invading troops opening fire on civilians.
Sad news has reached us from the North Bohemian town of Liberec, where deplorable incidents and conflicts with the occupation armies have taken place today. The clash is reported to have ended with 6 dead and 47 wounded Czechoslovak citizens.
Exactly a year later, we can hear a different message from Radio Prague as it reports on the huge protest demonstrations to mark the first anniversary of the invasion. Unnervingly is the following report, read by the same announcer, who had just been heard reacting with horror at the brutality of the invasion a year earlier.
Crowds of Gorkhas began to form, and in order to cope with the confusion, riot units had to use batons, tear gas, and water from fire hoses. This continued on Thursday afternoon and evening. However, police and army units and people's militia had been well prepared, and by Thursday night, the situation was fully under control.
Using the heavy-handed techniques that became so familiar in the years that followed, Czechoslovakia's new hardline leaders made it clear that they had the country firmly under their thumb, and that included Radio Prague's broadcast, which in August 1969 took the official line quite uncritically.
So after those few excited days, we are now able to pose the question, what is the result of all this? On the one hand, the sum is discouraging. 5 people dead, a number of wounded, material damage in the streets, and on public installations. On the other hand, the result is a failure for the forces that are openly hostile to socialism. The bulk of the population, the workers in the first place, could not be persuaded to stage a massive strike or some other national demonstration.
The process of discrediting the reforms of the Prague scene accelerated at a pace, and in 1970 the radio went so far as to broadcast a whole series devoted to proving that the reforms of 1968 had been hijacked by right-wing reactionaries. Here's a short extract.
V pořadech rozhlasu a televize, na stránkách novin a časopisů, In radio and television programs, in newspapers, in magazines, engaged journalists are continuing to expose the real intentions of those right-wingers. On the basis of factual evidence, the public is beginning to understand that the seemingly noble words of those people concealed nothing but careerism and anti-humanism, goals that have nothing at all in common with socialism.
By 1970, the process of turning the Prague Spring into a counter-revolution was more or less complete. For ABC Radio National, I'm Keith Perron. Modlitba má dať promlouvá srdcím, která zloby čas nespálil, jak květy mráz, jak nás. A dír dál zůstává s touto krajinou. For Radio Prague's 80th anniversary, they've been doing a lot of very special programs. One of the programs that they did do that I came across, which is actually rather interesting, is called Where is Radio At and Where is It Headed? It was a discussion that they had with Graham Dixon.
Radio Prague is today celebrating the 80th anniversary of its first shortwave broadcast. Obviously, the medium of radio has changed enormously since the 31st of August 1936, particularly in recent times with the advent of the internet. To look at where radio is at today and where it may be headed in the future, I spoke to Graham Dixon, a former managing editor at BBC Radio 3, who's now head of radio at the European Broadcasting Union in Geneva. My first question concerned the biggest changes Mr. Dixon has seen in his three decades plus in the radio industry.
When I started, there was a single linear channel, which was radio, and you were absolutely obsessed by making that one channel as good as possible. And of course, if you missed a program, unless you were fortunate enough to be working in the industry, if you missed a program, that was it. There was no way you could access this. Whereas actually now, it seems to be the most significant thing is actually the fact that you can actually listen on demand. There are clearly things, of course, the Olympics, which we've just had, and news, which are very exciting when they're at the moment. And I think that's a real particularity of radio. But actually being able to go back, being able to access programs, listen when you like, has gone along, I think, with an increasing focus and awareness on audience needs and serving audiences. I think we're far more interactive now, clearly because the technology allows it, but actually also in our attitude as an industry in terms of reaching out to audiences, having a dialogue with them, and actually creating services to meet their changing needs, respecting the fact that they have many, many calls on their time, and we want to be an attractive destination and remain so.
Well, there's been a lot of talk in recent years about DAB radio. And now, of course, many people consume radio on their smartphones or other handheld devices. Where are we at with DAB on smartphones? If I understand it right, not many phones now come with the DAB function.
Yeah, we've been really fortunate, actually, this year, because LG has launched a DAB phone with fantastic functionality. People are starting to produce apps for it, and I'm very confident that as we go into the autumn, people will see the success of this phone, and actually there are discussions going on, which we're involved in, about other manufacturers moving in the same direction. Because I think it's massively important that radio is not only available on IP over the internet. We've all lived through a really difficult year with events in Munich, in Brussels, in Paris. And of course, on those occasions, when these national emergencies happen, it's quite characteristic that the government or whoever the security, responsible security, are switching down the internet. And that's exactly at the moment when people most need information and most need to come back to what is an extremely reliable medium, and a medium we know from any survey to be really reliable, which is radio and public radio. So in fact, I think our societies need to have a way of transmitting radio which is independent from the internet. Of course, the ideal in the long run is to have this robust backbone of audio transmission with all sorts of exciting new offers provided with the flexibility of IP around the basic sound. But there are some issues, to say the least, about moving there, not least the amount of data that live radio listening consumes, 3 hours per person per day across Europe. And of course, you know, battery life as well is not up to providing this. So we absolutely need terrestrial radio transmission medium. DAB, by being digital, of course, is the gateway into many new applications, many new visions of how radio can actually meet people's needs.
What about the role of cars in the future of radio? Obviously, cars are the place where many people consume radio.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, this, because it very much varies from country to country. If you look at the statistics, a country like Italy is very, very high on car listening. In Switzerland, where I live, car listening is relatively low. But of course, it's a really important part of people's listening. Again, depending on the markets, a large number of cars have DAB in the UK and Norway and in Switzerland. Germany now, with its increasing commitment to DAB, and of course, its strong involvement in the car industry, means that there's going to be, I think, a considerable increase of the number of cars produced with DAB. But of course, the smartphone is, of course, itself dockable into a car, which is another exciting possibility which is being explored in Norway. So I suppose when it comes to it and we talk about platforms, I really care about robustness, but of course people need to be able to consume radio in the ways that are convenient to them. And the one thing that I really care about is that radio should be a direct relationship between the broadcaster and the consumer, not susceptible to paywalls, not susceptible to gatekeepers, but actually this should be there for everyone, rich or poor, whatever their means, to be able to consume. And for that, we really need to have devices that people pay once, they go to a shop, they buy their radio, they switch it on, and for many years, hopefully, it gives them really efficient radio programming.
You used to work for the BBC, and the BBC's iPlayer is maybe the best-known on-demand player that there is. I've seen it described as a catch-up service, but is it really about catching up? I think for many people, that's simply the way today they consume. They don't feel like they're catching up on anything. It's just the time that they want to consume something.
Yes, it's interesting, the iPlayer. I mean, in terms of television, television has become more asynchronous than radio. People are consuming more television out of real time than they are radio. Because I think that still radio, if we look at it, it's incredibly useful to have those programs on demand. And of course, the iPlayer is a major success and has really transformed listening for a lot of people. But if we look at the programs that are accessed, they're very much the sort of information-heavy programs. But, you know, what is special about radio, and of course, it's really important to understand that many people working in radio, I'd say everyone working in radio, really appreciates what IP has done. But actually, when it comes to it, radio is, for most people, most of the time, a live experience. They go there for entertainment. They go there for company. They go there for information and news, for weather, for traffic. So many aspects of our lives. Radio is a real touchstone of information and actually providing us with what we need. And a lot of that happens in real time. So at the risk of sounding slightly conservative, I think we mustn't forget the centrality of the live experience for radio listeners, which is absolutely vital. And then, of course, the add-on of being able to return to it is, of course, highly attractive.
Is the word radio still relevant? Personally, I listen very little to anything live. I think of it simply as audio.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, you can take two approaches to this. I remember at the BBC, the division that I was part of called itself Audio a number of years ago and then moved back to radio. And I think that respects the fact that most of our listeners still think of what public service broadcasters do, and also, of course, commercial broadcasters, as radio. So it's having that identity. But, of course, it perhaps is also underlining, and I just returned to a previous point here, it's perhaps also underlining the liveness of it. Radio is something we expect to be live, and actually that's a really special thing, that expertise of delivering live radio. So, yes, of course it's audio, we can consume it when we want, but of course one of the special things that we're, I say modestly, really good at is delivering a live experience. So maybe the word radio underlines that.
And how do public radio stations justify spending money, sometimes a lot of money, on services that aren't live?
Well, I think if you're not providing a rounded service for audiences who listen however they want to, in the way they want to, on the devices and platforms they're interested in using, then I don't think there's really a great deal of future. We need to be listening to audiences, understanding their needs, and actually providing for them rather than simply providing the listening experience via a linear stream and then expecting people to come to us. I think the days of such, how shall I say, pomposity are probably over, and that we need to be really aligned with audiences, aligned with their needs. And it's really impossible to say, yes, but you have to be interested in, I don't know, consumer affairs at 2 o'clock on a Tuesday. Otherwise, you've got to wait until next Tuesday at 2 o'clock. Those days are gone.
Radio Prague is celebrating 80 years of existence. Obviously, you don't have a crystal ball. You can't see 80 years into the future. But if we look to the nearer future, in the coming decades, what do you see as the most likely developments in radio?
Well, first of all, congratulations on 80 years. This is a most fantastic achievement. We've been talking quite a lot about technology together. Of course, 80 years ago, it was technological innovation which made this whole thing possible. And clearly, we've reached the point at which we have the flexibility of being able to listen out of real time, and we've discussed that a certain amount. But all sorts of exciting things could happen. I was in touch with someone recently who was seeing if there was a Google-type application that could be put on top of audio so that audio could be searched. So we could look for the first use of a word. We could look back, for instance, even over what different politicians have said and look for when they've talked about on radio different subjects. That sort of deep search of audio is something that's not yet really available, but something that actually could be a way of changing our perception and looking backwards over our archives. I think that could be incredibly interesting. I also think that personalization is really important. To what extent would we want to make our own schedules? We've talked about live, we've talked about on demand, but could we somehow produce our own schedule that gives us what we want live to keep us in contact with our world, but actually at the same time come out of that live world into subjects or musical choices which really interest us in between. So is it possible somehow to create our own schedule? And then there's all the stuff about wearables and information, being able to give smarter updates. Wouldn't it be interesting, for instance, if a particular subject that you'd notified was about to be mentioned and you got, a message saying they're about to talk on a particular, musician, subject of news interest, and you knew that was about to happen, to get that type of warning that it's worth actually tuning in because there's a live update. You know, I think the opportunities for radio, for audio and for public service are really more than ever before. And I think it's up to us all working in the industry to have an incredibly open mind and try and exploit these exciting opportunities.
And that was a special program from Radio Prague for their 80th anniversary, taking a look at where radio was and where it's going. They were speaking there with Graham Dixon. And if you want more, actually, you can check out the website for Radio Prague. There's some very interesting programs that they do have there. You're listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International.
The British DX Club is one of the world's leading DX clubs, with hundreds of members both in the UK and around the globe. BDXE produce a comprehensive monthly magazine called Communication, covering all aspects of the DXing hobby. The BDXE Audio Circle is also available and is a monthly program of DX catches and general chat about radio. For more information, please write to the British DX Club, 10 Hemdean Hill, Caversham, Reading, RG4, 7SB in the United Kingdom, or visit the website at www.bdxc.org.uk. That's www.bdxc.org.uk.
The Spectrum Monitor is a monthly electronic magazine covering shortwave, amateur radio, scanning, satellites, Wi-Fi, and vintage radio, which is available for any device capable of opening a PDF file.
Corrie 105, reduce speed to 22 knots.
Speed 220, Corrie 105.
The Spectrum Monitor also covers amateur radio satellites, maritime and military monitoring on shortwave, reviews of receivers, scanners, and software used for shortwave, and more. Annual subscriptions for 12 issues is only $24, with individual monthly issues available for $3 each. If you're already a subscriber, you can renew your subscription by clicking on the Sign Up for 2015 button. MasterCard, Visa, Discover, and PayPal are accepted. For more details, visit our website at www.thespectrummonitor.com.
You are listening, of course, to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International. Let us know how you heard the program, either on satellite or shortwave or through the internet. Now, this month, the month of September, we're going to be bringing you part three, not here on this program, but on PCJ Radio International, the third program in our series from the Radio Netherlands archives. And that's going to be in the month of September. September's edition of the program will be looking at drama from Radio Netherlands. Yes, Radio Netherlands did have a drama department and produced a lot of very popular programs that were distributed to radio stations around the world. That program will be presented by Paulette Macquarie, and we'll give you the details next week of when that program will be going out. All right, let's now turn our attention to propagation, what's been happening and what we can expect. Here's Glenn Hauser.
Keith from IPS in Australia, the global HF propagation forecast through September 3rd. Normal at low and middle latitudes, normal to fair at high latitudes. Mild depression in MUFs and degradations in HF conditions may be observed due to minor geomagnetic activity. From Space Weather South Africa through September 3rd, magnetic conditions unsettled, shortwave fade-outs unlikely, MUF unstable. From Met Office UK through September 4th, solar activity low, a slight chance of flares and blackouts, a chance of minor storm intervals on September 2nd and 3rd. From Peter Coleman in Prague, the geomagnetic field will be quiet to unsettled on September 2nd, 3rd, 6th to 8th, 12th and 17th. Quiet to active on September 4th, 5th, 13th, 19th to 21st. Mostly quiet on September 9th to 11th, 14th to 16th, and 18th. From SWPC in Boulder, the geomagnetic field unsettled to active until September 8th, also 13th, 14th, 17th, and 19th to 21st, with A and K indices peaking at 15 and 4. Lowest A's and K's of 5 and 2 on September 9th to 12th, 15th, 16th, 18th, and 22nd to 24th. Solar flux dropping from 85 September 2nd to 78 September 5th to 10th. Back up to 85 by September 23rd. William Hepburn's VHF, UHF microwave DX maps show extreme tropospheric ducting all week off Baja California, between South Africa and Madagascar, and across parts of the Mediterranean through September 4th. From eastern to mid-North Atlantic until September 5th. Around most of the Arabian Peninsula all week.
One final thing. If you tuned in to this program a couple of weeks ago, you may remember that we actually had Jeff White on the show, and he talked about a new DRM receiver that was going to be launched at HFCC, which actually just concluded about just over a week ago. Well, we have put our names down for one of those DRM receivers, and as soon as we get it, we're going to be putting it through the testing stage like we have with the other DRM receivers and bring you a review of it here on the program. So we don't know when that is because we have to wait now. I think they said till probably October or the beginning of November, but we'll give you the details on that when we get closer to that date. If you want to let us know what you think of the program, have any ideas, comments, or suggestions, our email address is mnp@pcjmedia.com, mnp@pcjmedia.com. And of course, you can listen to this program again by visiting our website, pcjmedia.com. You can listen to it through Stitcher Smart Radio or sign up to it through iTunes. So, on behalf of everyone here at PCJ Radio International, I'm Keith Perron, wishing you well, saying so long, take care, 73 and 88 to the ladies.